Hello and welcome to the Mighty Cast episode 3. I'm your host Nicholas Ritchie and I'm with
Christopher Young,
our residential and only other person on the thing, but the expert. I've always tried to make you look awesome at the beginning, but I haven't like thought of any titles or cool things to say first, so.
Well, there's plenty of things that people call me, Nick, but it's probably we don't want to lose our we don't want to get an explicit sticker on iTunes when we get on iTunes anyway.
Nope. So I guess today we're going to be talking about how most people change behavior and then how people probably should change behavior. So why don't you take it away, Coach?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Nick. Most people, from my experience, which is vast, over 30 years training and 27 years of coaching people, is people first of all say, oh, I want to do X, but I don't want to give up Y, and I don't want to do this, and I don't want to do that, and their focus is all in the wrong place. So I remember quite vividly a lady who I was helping out who was she was about 8 stone, so that's 51 kilos, which you sort of think, well, you know, that's she's small, so probably happy, but she was about 5 foot.
Okay.
Yeah, it's 5 foot and a bit dumpy. And the first thing she said was, the wine is non-negotiable.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, because I was interested to know, I said, how much wine do you have a day? She said, oh, about 2 bottles a night. So it's yeah, that was the first thing. I wanna change my body shape. I wanna be firmer. I don't wanna jiggle. But the wine's non-negotiable. So it was almost as if, first of all, come the behaviours that she's prepared to accept. Okay, maybe she will change her dietary habits somewhat, and she'll change your exercise habits, but there's many things that she won't change, and she actually got some quite good results. But 2 bottles of wine a night for someone that size isn't insignificant.
Not at all.
And I was thinking about this because I've just one of the books I read recently is one of the whole slew of books on Lance Armstrong or Lance Armstrong related topics. You probably have a whole library just on Lance Armstrong.
But it's called, yep.
Yeah, absolutely. We Might As Well Win. And it's written by the guy who's team director for US Postal and Discovery when Armstrong rode for them. And his name was Johan Brunel, who was a great cyclist in his own right. And when he was cycling, he was known as an intelligent cyclist. So you know, if we're going to use other more popular sports, especially in the UK, you know, he's you know, a footballer like him would be someone like Teddy Sheringham, or a baseball player might be the smart-ass shortstop who knows everything that's going on. Yeah, he was that guy. He was the guy who knew how the race was going and when to make the break and when to let someone go, because he knew they wouldn't be able to put too much distance into him and his team.
Mm-hmm.
So real smart guy, real sporting smarts, and he got taken on by Lance Armstrong actually to be their coach, and they're doing all this training for the upcoming season, and they hadn't actually set a goal. Lance Armstrong had this nebulous goal, which sounds a bit contradictory, doesn't it? Lance Armstrong and the nebulous goal. That doesn't make sense. Most goal-oriented person of all time, perhaps, and he started off with a nebulous goal.
Well, but of course, we all start somewhere, right? We all start in the same place, really.
So, right.
Which is,
yeah,
dumb, stupid, and lazy. So,
absolutely. I guess we, you know, a goal sort of starts as a nebulous idea, and then the more sort of dedicated amongst us will will firm the goal up and make it a definite thing we have to achieve. But in his first Tour de France back after cancer, Armstrong was hoping for a couple of stage wins, not just for him, but for his whole team. He wasn't thinking any more than, okay, we've got this sprinter and he might be able to win this stage, and we've got this guy who might be good on a breakaway and he might be able to win that stage. Mm-hmm. But Brunel was the one who said, if we're doing all this work, yeah, we might as well be in it to win it. And according to Brunel, the first time he said this, Armstrong sort of laughed and you know, you're not serious. And he said, yeah, sure, I'm serious. Now, obviously, Brunel had seen all the lab tests on Armstrong and knew how exceptional they were, despite the fact that he had almost died from cancer 3 years before. Mm-hmm. But he knew what he was dealing with here. So, first of all, they had a set of behaviours. They had certain training outline that they were going to do. So everything from intensity to volume to the type of structure they were going to do, whether they're going to concentrate on mountains or flat stages or this, that, the other, or not even just the training for the Tour de France, but training for the season as a whole, which is how most all the cycling teams trained in those days. They just trained for the season like any other sport.
They had their off time and got
yeah,
back.
Well, exactly. Yep. Yeah. Our team is at this sort of in this position. We have these strengths and these weaknesses. Therefore, we might win this road race in March, or we might win this small stage race in May, and then we want a good showing in the Tour de France because that's where all the TV coverage comes from, and that's where the big bucks are. So that might be the way most teams would prepare for the year. Mm-hmm. But Brunel saw that he had in Armstrong an absolute beast in long stage races, aka the Tour de France, the Giro d'Italia, and the Vuelta a España, the Spanish Tour. And but they focused on the Tour de France, so he actually hardly did any of the early races in the season. Yeah, maybe one or two, but they were considered just tune-ups for the tour that was coming, and they would miss big races where there's prize money and lots of prestige. They'd miss these relatively minor races so they could train for the tour. And there's a great line that I put in my write up of this book in our new book, Nick, the Mighty Mind, mm-hmm. where I tell the story of Lance Armstrong's climbing the Hautcam, which is one of the mountains in the Pyrenees, and they've been out on this mountain all day, 8 hours. And Armstrong's on his bike. It's just him, and it's and Johan Brunel's trailing along in his car, driving at about 20 miles an hour behind Armstrong. And imagine how frustrating that must be. You're just in this car. You have to concentrate on your rider. You're in this car for 8 hours driving at 20 miles an hour. I think this guy deserves a medal for all the Tour de France wins as well. Yeah, this is amazing dedication. Anyway, Armstrong's at the top of this mountain, and it's pretty horrible weather. It's wet, it's windy, and Brunel says to Armstrong, "Lance, come into the car. That's it for the day. We'll look at what you've done and plan for tomorrow and the rest of the week." And Armstrong says, "No, I don't feel as though I know this mountain yet. I'm not friends with it." And he used the phrase, "I'm not friends with the mountain." Mm-hmm. So he turned his bike round and cycled back down to the bottom of the climb and started again. So another hour out on the climb. Just because he felt, after 8 hours, he still didn't feel like he knew the mountain yet. So absolutely amazing dedication. Mm-hmm. And obviously from that sort of dedication, they then set the goal of, okay, let's win the tour. And it ended up that he actually won 7 Tour de France on the trot, which has never been done before.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what the world's most obsessive athlete of all time did when he set goals.
So the main point being is that good goals are good, and if you're a little crazy, that kind of helps.
Yeah, and I think that's the real take home message here. Maybe you have to be slightly obsessed. Mm-hmm. Like, Nick, do you ever get accused of being obsessed?
Well, honestly, I don't speak to a lot of people in English anymore, so. No, back when I was in the UK and stuff, when I go back home, people will say, it seems like a bit much, and you're just like, that's just the regular, you know, doing my due diligence, just doing my, that's what I need to do to get any better. You always got to push a little further, right? So if Lance didn't get to the top of the mountain, or he didn't feel good at the top of the mountain, he needed to do a bit more, then he just knew he needed to do a bit more, so, yeah. And other people that have no idea, you know, just don't get it, right? Like, the trainer thought, okay, that might be good enough for today, but the person who's actually doing it, they have a much better gauge, usually, of where they stand.
I think, well, they can do. Sometimes, sometimes I think the athlete can get emotionally involved.
Sure.
And you have to kind of... when I'm in coaching mode, because I do still try to think of myself as an athlete, Nick. but when in coaching mode, in lifting, if I see that an athlete has missed the lift, you have to analyze, okay, why have they missed this lift?
Mm-hmm.
And if the answer is because they don't have this weight in them today, then there's no point taking that lift again. They're going to, just going to get stuck in their head, and it's going to be an issue. And I've seen other coaches, and they go, do it again. I'm actually talking about, a former Great Britain Olympic weightlifting coach here who made one of his female lifters take, I think it's a 70-kilo snatch. She was only 56 kilos or so.
Mm-hmm.
But he made her do a 70-kilo snatch about 8 times, and she missed it every single time. And the final time just started crying and walked off. But he kept saying, do it again. And it was embarrassing to be there.
Yeah.
But he just, do it again. And no point doing that.
Sure.
I don't think. I think it just... It sets the girl up for future failure. Every time she sees that weight now, she's going to remember those 8 misses.
Yeah.
But if you then get an athlete who something went wrong, their form was wrong for that lift, or they just weren't focused enough, or whatever the reason was. And you sort of think, well, if they got this right, then next time they'll get it.
Mm-hmm.
By all means, do the lift again. But and in Armstrong's case, okay, it's not as riding a mountain is hard work, but it's not like a maximal lift. It's not the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But if he's going to ride the mountain and he's going to ride it worse than he did the first time. And it's gonna drain him and ruin his training for the next week. Then there's no point doing it.
So
you have to, see what the athlete says, or if you're the athlete coaching yourself, you have to ask yourself, why did it happen?
Yeah.
And if it happened because of your focus was elsewhere. There's some nice girl in the corner of the gym doing bent over rows, and you're looking at her rather than thinking of your upcoming deadlift. Then yeah. You maybe take the lift again, but if you got yourself in the right frame of mind, gripped the bar and started to pull and it stopped about mid shin and nothing happened, then that's probably it for the day. Do something else. It's as always, Nick. It's kind of an it depends answer. should you go? No, that was rubbish. Do it, have another go at it, because it can work the other way. But going back to the obsessive thing, the amount of people who say, oh, but you're obsessive. And I say, well, I spend, yeah, we've spoken about this before, Nick. I spend about six to 8 hours a week lifting on hard training weeks. And I might do a couple of other little things. I know people who spend that much time in a bar over a weekend, Nick.
Yeah.
Not just over the week, but over a weekend. And no one says, oh, you're obsessive about your drinking.
Mm-hmm. And that's a really good way to point it out. Like, I train twice a week now. It's about, I mean, just training with this other guy, it was about 2 hours for our whole session. I mean, I did everything. I did squats, I did deadlifts, bench, and then, you know, a bit of benching and pressing as well. And whole thing altogether took about 2 hours, maybe a little bit more because it was our first session to get training together. But, you know, that's 4 hours a week. I think I worked it out to, like, 3.375% or something of my waking hours during the week, which is very little for the, you know, for your health. And that's pretty much all I do for my health, aside from, you know, eating and sleeping. So,
hey, podcast listeners, you'd never know that Nick Ritchie is a mathematician, would you? I worked it out to 3.75 of my waking hours.
Yeah, 3.375, but... Yeah.
Sorry, 3 point. I do apologize. See, I'm not a mathematician, really, Chef.
That's because you're old. Absolutely. Memory's going.
Thanks, buddy. Oh, dear. But yeah, you know, you're taking 4 hours a week, or probably more accurately, once you guys hit a rhythm and get bored of listening to each other.
Yeah, we'll get out a little quicker. But
exactly. Once that happens, it's probably going to be 3 to 3.5 hours, and look at the results you're getting.
Yep.
You know, and it's probably more entertaining than going to some bar as well.
Yeah. Well, I can. The best part is I can go to Costco afterwards and eat half of a giant pizza and a few other goodies and not have anything to pay for it. It's just that helps me recover and feel good. So.
Is this part of your diet plan, Nick?
I'm gonna have to bring that in here. But the thing is okay. I'm not losing, but I'm not gaining, and I'm drinking. I've been drinking, you know, cappuccinos every day and like a Coke before bed. Like not your Coke Zero, but just regular. And I changed to ice cream last week instead. And anyway, yeah, I'm gonna be trying to drop a kilo every 2 weeks again here. That's just way too easy. So, yeah, so I'm going to clean that up, though.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Fantastic. But, you know, but compared to many people, especially if they saw what you do, it's, you know, they'd say you're obsessed. And obviously, yeah, you know, we're almost getting caught up in the trap of just talking about time. But the amount of people I've had who say, oh, how much do you train per week? And I say, oh, okay, they're obviously referring to time, so I say 6 to 8 hours a week, and they go, oh, I do 12 hours a week, and it's like, what does that mean? You do 12 hours of what?
It means you're doing something wrong.
Yeah, and depending where I am, I might say, or if I've got to be polite to the person, I might be thinking it, do you want to come and do some squats against bands with me on Friday night? Yeah, and we'll see if you can train for 3 hours doing that sort of stuff, because that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Even at Westside, they don't train for 3 hours on squats versus bands. You know, that's going to be that would kill people. I trained the other night safety squat bar squats against medium green bands if it's the jump stretch bands. And I did those building up in weight. I did one absolutely maxed out set. And I'll tell you what, I could hardly do anything else that session. It was just a couple of sets of this and a couple of sets of that after these squats. If you're doing challenging stuff, you will not be able to do a lot of time on it.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
Your body just, it can't do anymore. And there's no I'm going to get in the mood for it, because your muscles won't cooperate. You're delusional if you think you can push it after a certain point.
There was an interesting analysis done, actually, of, I believe it was a Romanian gymnastics team, and this was back in the 80s or early 90s, and they looked at how much actual activity was done within a two-hour training session. Mm-hmm. Right, so the gymnasts are there for 2 hours. They're doing artistic gymnastic movements. So for a man, that will be rings, it will be vault, it will be pommel horse, it will be floor, mm-hmm. it will be high bar. Right, how long out of the 2 hours do you think they actually spent exercising?
Oh, I'd say probably 30 minutes tops.
8 minutes.
Yeah.
8 minutes. Yeah, that's the scary thing. I'd have to have a stopwatch one time when we're training and just have it on one person. So, you know, see, you know, count the walk out in the squat and all the rest of it. But from the time the bar is removed from the rack and to the time it's put back. And then accumulate every set. That would be interesting. It'd be interesting to see actually how long we're actually under tension, as it were, rather than just talking crap.
Well, when you do your 10 minutes of singles as a finisher, that's that gives you a good amount of time under tension.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the 12 minutes of health thing. That's a lot of work in a short time frame, isn't it?
Uh-huh. When you told me about that, then I ended up doing my first squat session of that. I knew I would hate it, but yeah, it was pretty
good. You hate it, but love it at the same time.
Of course, because it's a character builder.
Yes, that's right.
It's one of those stupid character things that doesn't make you any stronger, but it's just kind of fun to do. Well,
hey, Nick, it's all work, mate. It's all good work.
Yep.
You know, so of course it's going to make you stronger. I wouldn't tell you anything that wasn't going to help you get stronger.
Nah.
Oh dear, what do you think I am, mate? But there you go. Here's two obsessed meatheads rabbiting on about the stuff we do, and of course this would be totally alien to most people. You know, most people's idea of a training session, let's say that their goal is fat loss, is going to be built around doing cardiovascular stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So ironically enough, Nick, they're going to be doing more actual exercise time than we are, but the intensity level is incredibly low.
Yeah, and that's why I thought the gymnast actually would have been a bit higher on their actual time, because I mean that's intense stuff. It's all body weight, and it's body weight at the same time. So
yeah,
anyway,
yeah, it's very ballistic stuff.
Yeah,
and some of the moves, obviously, doing certain positions on the rings, it's going to be very intense, and you know, releasing and catching on the high bar is very intense. But there's obviously, it's quite a lot of time when they're doing their little. I think they have set things they have to do. So they have to do in the floor routine, they have to do a handstand. Mm-hmm. Now, to an elite gymnast, doing a handstand is, you know, it's like me and you taking a drink. It's not exactly.
Yeah.
It's one of the hangovers from 1932, isn't it? Where they set the rules up and they say, oh yeah, well, have to do a handstand and you have to do a forward roll, and these things are still in there, which is hilarious, really.
Yeah.
Like, anything I can do shouldn't be in the repertoire of an elite gymnast, should it?
Yep. By the way, I'd love to see you walking on your hands. That would just be like a fun YouTube video.
Oh dear. But yeah, back to being obsessed.
Oh yeah.
And even some of the people I train at work, forget about the lifters at Dark Side, but the people I train in my work gym, you know, I've heard others and they go, oh, you know, this guy does Chris's program. Oh, he's really obsessed with it now. And, this guy's training 4 hours a week, for goodness sake. I don't think that's anywhere near obsessive. But again, maybe I'm the wrong person to ask. So when you look at the levels of obsession, me and you are at one level, and these nutty endurance athletes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're at a different level. Okay, their obsession with intensity is not quite the same, but their obsession with work certainly is.
They just want to be miserable as long as possible every week, pretty much.
Catholics, is it? every endurance athlete was raised Catholic, and they're punishing themselves. There you go, I've just alienated about half the audience there. Yeah. Be careful what I say. So if you are one of these lucky people who is, if you're accused of being obsessed by your friends, then maybe you do have a slightly different work ethic to everyone else. And if you have that ability to work, then, as Johan Brunel would say, you might as well win. Right, so you might as well set a lofty goal. You might as well have a goal of, if you're a guy who's 5'10", and you might as well have a goal of being 100 kilos muscular. Therefore, you're going to need to be able to squat about 180 kilos, 400 pounds. You're going to need to be able to bench press 300 pounds. You're going to need to be able to deadlift 450 pounds. All these things would be linked together for the overall goal of being 100 kilos muscular body weight. So 100 kilos is about, 15 stone 10, 220 pounds. So you don't see many people like that walking around or even in, you see a few in gyms, obviously. But that is possible for most people. If they are slightly obsessed, and if you're gonna work hard, well, you might as well have a good goal.
Yep.
There you go. That's pretty much the message. And on the reverse side of it, if you're not prepared to work hard, then please don't bitch about. I don't get this result, that result. Why can't I? Do this, that, the other. Because you're lazy. Why do I carry all this fat? Because you're a greedy pig. the questions you're asking are the wrong questions. How can I? What do I need to do to be 100 kilos of muscular body weight? Well, you need to do X, Y, and Z. These are your behaviours. Yep. But if you have the behaviours in line first, then you can set more lofty goals. Does that make sense, Nick?
For sure. That's actually kind of what I told my kids on the first day of classes here. I said, if you get one thing from me, it's that you're the sum of your habits. And if you want to be a top student, you're going to have better study habits than the other students. And how good I'm teaching some really good kids, and the ones that do study do a lot of studying. And it's like, if you want to beat these guys, and these guys are doing, 3 or 4 hours a night after school, you got a lot to do. And, playing video games and sleeping during class isn't going to cut it. So your behaviors are going to determine your results. And it's pretty much simple as that. What's that?
How old are these kids?
These are middle school kids. But, I teach them life lessons from a young age.
Good for you. Well, and of course, what you're doing is you're creating a bunch of obsessed kids.
Yeah. No, the thing is, I don't push studying at all. I don't really push studying. I push that they're just, more able to learn and that they have good manners, because good manners are going to serve them well their whole lives. So, but anyway, I'm very realistic with them, though, because a lot of the kids that aren't going to study, and I know they're not going to study, it's, again, about your realistic expectations. It's like, well, if you're not going to study at all after school, you're probably not going to have very good grades. So don't be disappointed when that happens. If you're going to goof off, then enjoy goofing off, but know that that's what you're setting yourself up for. It comes at an expense. So
Well, it's exactly the same as we were talking about. You know, if you're going to go to the bar instead of do your deadlift session, then don't be surprised when your deadlift sucks.
Yeah, or two bottles of wine a night and you're a little bit overweight, then yeah, there's a reason for that. You replace that those two bottles of wine with a bit of gym time or something instead, or just sleep. I mean, even just sleeping and cutting out the wine is going to be a lot better for you. So.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. There was quite an interesting study. I think it was a couple of years ago now that said those people who slept less than, I think it was 5 hours a night, were something like 50% more likely to be obese.
Sure.
It's just because they're awake for longer and able to eat more food, I guess.
Yeah, probably. And I'm sure their metabolism suffers a little bit for it.
Yeah.
And plus you've got all the stress that usually comes with being sleep-deprived, which I'm sure doesn't help any.
And how do you deal with that stress of being sleep-deprived, Nick? You know, maybe food and drink might come into that.
For sure, and stimulants.
Plenty of stimulants.
Which usually have calories if you're going to Starbucks to stay awake, and it makes you fat and then sleep less. Nasty downward spiral there.
Have you heard of a guy who writes, I think he writes for Testosterone, he's got the slightly strange name of Tony Gentlecore.
Mm-hmm.
He told a story of a woman who, I think he writes all his articles while sitting in a Starbucks, and obviously he's people watching as he does this, and he talks to this woman who goes in and loudly proclaims to everyone that she's on the Atkins diet and that she's allowed some, I'm not a coffee drinker, Nick, so I'm probably going to get all this wrong, but some super duper latte with cream and God knows what in it, and she's allowed that because she's on the Atkins. And Tony Gentlecore estimated that one coffee had about 1,500 calories in. Apparently she has a couple of these a day.
Wow.
I wonder why she's overweight. There you go.
Exactly. And I love it. Like, you just keep on seeing more vitamin or healthy labels on things. I wish I could remember. Yesterday I saw some new vitamin. It was like vitamin chocolate or something like that. It was some vitamin-infused chocolate bar. And, you know, the thing's going to weigh in at about 400, 500 calories when you eat it, but it has vitamins, so people are just looking for an excuse to do the crap that they want to do anyway. You know, they're like, well, I'm on the Atkins diet. I can eat, you know, 3,500 calories and at Starbucks and then have meals because I'm on Atkins. I'm being healthy.
Oh, it's ridiculous, isn't it? There was a chocolate bar, I believe, that it said one of the hooks they used was contains antioxidants. Like that means anything.
Yeah.
Oh, dear, I was rereading Bad Science by Ben Goldacre about a month ago. And he says in that he says that the one thing that's been connected to antioxidant consumption is a small but statistically significant increase in sudden death. Yeah, it's one of those things that doesn't make sense at all. But the amount of people who this has antioxidants, that has antioxidants, and people go, oh, that means it's good, right? Well, no. It's actually potentially the exact opposite of good. You might as well be eating that full fat, full cream, full sugar stuff and forgetting about your antioxidants. Is pretty much doing, okay, it's not doing the same thing, but you know what I mean. It's the perception people have. It's got vitamins in, and vitamin water's another one, wasn't it? So it's tap water with added vitamins and we're getting back onto one of our favorite subjects, aren't we? What people fall for. And,
It's amazing how tough it is to sell a legitimately, like, good book And then people, like, buy crap all the time. You're like, hey, I'm actually writing something that's going to help you. We're doing something that, you know, if you follow this, you're going to get what you want. But they're like, nah, nah, nah. Just confuse me and lie to me, and I'll happily buy your stuff and buy into your lies because that makes me feel better. And I don't have to change anything.
Yeah, and if anyone's wondering what a good, honest book might be, you know, something like Becoming Mighty is a good, honest book. Yeah, shameless plug.
Shameless plug.
It's a good honest book. I can shamelessly plug it.
Exactly. If it's good and honest, then, you know, you get what you pay for. But it's not going to be like, you can get all of your, you can become a world-class powerlifter by drinking Starbucks every day and not training. Because you could do it with Starbucks every day, I think. But, you know, you're going to have to train with it, too.
I think there's certain things that are really are non-negotiable, and training is one of them.
Yeah. Oh, like my kids, when they have to speak English, right? And a lot of them have the goal of speaking English better, you know, improving their fluency, their pronunciation, and so forth. And then I ask them, you know, okay, what kind of behavior can you make to achieve this goal, you know, and do a little class lesson on this. And some of the kids are like, well, I'm going to watch things, I'm going to study my books and stuff, and I go, guys, it's very simple here. You know, if you want to speak English better, all these other things are excellent, but in order to improve your speaking, you have to, do you know what it is, Chris?
I think it might be speaking.
Yes! Very good.
They don't put any
actual speaking practice in with their goal, and I'm like, you missed it. If you want to get stronger, you might want to train, or if you need to lose weight, you might want to diet or train more.
this is called the law of specificity.
Yep.
Yeah, you actually have to do the thing you're trying to improve. it's funny, isn't it? Yeah, it's people seem to we get caught up in all the minutiae of it. You know, what supplements do I need? Yeah, should I take No Explode or NO2 or it's like, well, are you training? I'm gonna start training.
Yeah.
you're eating plenty of protein? Oh well, yeah, I'm planning on. I actually did have a guy who came to see me, and he told me about all the supplements he'd bought that week in preparation for. Starting his new regime. So have you been to the gym? No, not yet.
Yeah, and that's a problem with a lot of, I mean, just everything. Everything's marketing and pushing products and, you know, I mean, that's what the media's for, essentially. It's everybody's got something to sell when you kind of come down to it. But at the same time, you don't need to be telling new people to the game that they need all these supplements because they don't. They need to get their ass in the gym and then not even worry about protein until they've actually gone to the gym a few times and lifted something somewhat heavy or challenging, right? So.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting. Another book I read a couple of years ago. It's a shame you're no longer in this country, Nick, because I'd have shoved it in your hands straight away after finishing it, because it's a great book. It's about York Barbell, right, which was the first, not just a powerhouse of a gym, which it was, but it was the first real media. Fitness media company, I guess. Even though there were people before who sold magazines and did this and did that, but Bob Hoffman, who is the owner of York Barbell, he sort of took it to another level. And in this book, it outlines when he realised that through selling, he could make more money through selling protein tablets than he could through making all these barbell sets that he was shipping out across America and all around the world, and it actually goes through the process they used to use, and they used to mix this gunk up in a great big tub, huge tub, which apparently they used for some part of the smelting process for iron. Mm-hmm. So I don't think there are many health and safety controls in there. not much health and safety going on here, but apparently he used to mix the first batches up with, you know, in this drum using a paddle. So he used to be a canoeist. He got an old paddle. He used to mix it up and then make it into they just called it high protein tablets. And he I think the first year they brought this stuff out, they made three times more money on that than everything else they did added together. And the other stuff they did was that they had Strength and Health magazine, mm-hmm. they had barbells, dumbbells, weight plates, all that sort of stuff, various books. And straight away, first year, you know, you sort of think when you introduce a new product, oh, it's gonna, you know, it's gonna take a while. No, not this. This was almost instantaneous. People couldn't get enough of it. And these protein tablets, apparently they tasted like chalk. And most of it probably was chalk. The actual nutritional content was pretty low. But people lapped it up. And of course, you know, it's a lot easier to shove down 50 tablets, even if they are all chalk, than it is to go and do a couple of sets of high rep squats and actually use the barbell set you bought 3 years ago that's been sitting there.
Yeah.
So it has ever been thus, Nick. It's unfortunately all around the marketing, and that's why there's people who call us obsessive, and at the same time, they're living their lives in the way they are. They're not just exceptional. They're incredibly average. Do you know what I mean by that?
Yeah.
Yeah, they do their exercise tasks and they babble along and they complain that, you know, that they're weak and this hurts and that hurts, and then they'll go and do something else. You know, they see some infomercial on TV and they try that for a while and again nothing happens, and then you have people like you, my mate, who are training twice a week, which I don't think anyone could say is obsessive. I know, we joke, you know, but Nick is the abbreviated powerlifter.
I'm doing the whole do just as much as needed and no more. kind of trying to find that line right there. So get results without any wasted effort, essentially.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the intelligent way of doing it. Yeah, of course.
It'll serve me well in the end, hopefully. So.
Of course it will, buddy. Yeah. Anyway, I think is that a well-flawed horse there?
Yeah, I think so. Well, let's summarize kind of what we were talking about at the beginning here, which is what separates normal goal setting from proper goal setting, and kind of what you can expect based on the difference between the two.
Yeah. Okay, Nick. So the average person. So this, just in case you haven't understood this, dear listener, this is not what you want to be like, but this is what most people do. They set a nebulous goal. Oh, I want to be fitter. Well, what does fit mean? If you could do something in 6 months' time which would tell you were fit, what would that be? And then you work towards that. I want to be in better shape. Well, round's a shape. Yeah, what do you mean by better shape? I want to be, I want to be 20 kilos lighter. I want to be more muscular. I want to be, look like this person, or whatever it might be. Let's firm these goals up. Let's have a think about it. What is a good goal for you? Along with setting a nebulous goal, they also underestimate the behavioural changes needed. So. I want to get stronger. Well, how strong? They normally haven't considered that. I want to get stronger. Okay. And so they go and do two Pilates classes a week. that sort of behavior is not going to make you stronger maybe it might make you slightly stronger. But if you compare doing a couple of Pilates classes a week to doing a couple of the lifting sessions that Nick does, that they are universes apart, orders of magnitude apart. And of course, you're going to be working a lot harder doing one than the other, but the results you get will be infinitely greater doing the sort of program Nick does compared to attending a couple of classes a week.
And that's for
so the question.
and that's just two sessions a week. So
yeah, absolutely. But most people they think all they have to do is look at a weight. Like I'm sorry to be bordering on sexist here, but the amount of women I have say to me, "Oh, I don't want to get big muscles." And I'm like, "Do you really think that picking up that 5 kilo dumbbell is gonna give you any muscle whatsoever?" No. It's a route to, you know, developing the body you want, but that is all it is. That is not going to make you wake up tomorrow looking like Linda Murray. It's just a ridiculous notion, which is I have no idea where it's come from. And the thing is,
it's so strong too, because I've encountered that one many, many, many times, and trying to convince someone that it's not going to make them into the Incredible Hulk, it's like converting someone to a new religion in, like, I don't know, however long you try to explain it, but it's not enough time. You just can't. I don't know. Have you successfully convinced many women that the, you know, lifting a 5 kilo dumbbell isn't going to make them monsters?
Yeah, quite a few, As someone who's been training people for years, the thing you need to have is someone to point to. On our YouTube channel, actually, I'm not even sure if it's on our YouTube channel. I don't think she wanted me to put it there. But on my work YouTube channel, I've got a video of a girl. She's squatting 100 kilos, mm-hmm. and she weighs about 53.
Mm-hmm.
And she's firm. She looks pretty much like 99% of women would want to look like.
Mm-hmm.
And she's squatting 100 kilos. And luckily, I've got her at my work gym, and I've got a few others who are, you know, using sort of, not, if not 100 kilos, you know, 50, 60, 70 kilos, and that's considered normal. And that culture then pervade. So you have someone come in and they think they're going to get big, but within a couple of sessions they'll see, you know, other girls squatting 50, 60 kilos, and they'll go, well, they're kind of like me, but a bit firmer.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they know they're on that path. You know, they're firming up, and then they're going to start losing some fat, and they're going to look a lot better. So yeah, it's almost like you have to have someone to point to.
Yeah, so.
But you,
which I,
yeah,
I don't have anybody around here to point to, so.
That's the problem. But okay. Yeah, it's like any behavioural change, isn't it? You have to if the information is going to be taken on board, they have to be ready to receive it, and a lot of the time they're not, and a lot of the time it's just not worth even saying.
Sure. All right, shall we finish up here with the what?
Sorry, Nick. Yeah, and of course, the what tends to happen is that there's frustration at lack of results. You know, I've been, how many people have you seen over the years, mate, who, they say, oh, I've gone to the gym 3 times a week for the last 10 years, and you look at them and you go, really? What have you been doing?
I don't know if I've run into that. I mean, usually it's I've gone to the gym for like 3 weeks and now I just don't have time for it anymore. I don't know if I've seen it. I mean, I know some older people here that work out that maybe they've been going for a while and obviously the results don't speak for themselves. Cause they're just doing the standard. I'm going to go in, do some barbell curls and tricep kickdowns or kickbacks.
Yeah.
And they can do that for 10, 20 years and, you know, it keeps them moving. But it doesn't really do much in terms of any kind of performance gain. And they're spending all that time in the gym. So, but yeah, like usually it's just people do it 3 months max. They stay on their workout regimen and then they're done. They give up. It was too hard or, you know, some part of their behaviors they weren't able to maintain. So they either need to sacrifice something or they need to do less or they just need to re-engineer how they're going about it. So.
Yeah, absolutely. You're quite right. That is the vast majority, and I think that's the case in across the world. I think it's, yeah, from what you said to me about Korea, it's definitely the case there. It's probably the case in America, and it's more than ever the case in the UK. The amount of people who drift in and out of exercise is it amazes me. But there are those who, you know, I chat to and they say, oh, yeah, you know, I always make sure I get my 3 sessions a week in and I'll do this, that, and the other. And you go, well, yeah, good on you. And obviously they are covering a lot of bases there.
Mm-hmm.
They're staying healthy. They're keeping themselves mobile. Yeah, they're probably a little bit stronger than they would be if they didn't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Louis Simmons would say, you know, if they went to court being accused of being an exerciser, the case would be thrown out for lack of evidence.
Yeah. And it's a lot of time invested for so little as well, it seems. So just in my book, I mean, that's just my opinion. But.
Yeah. Well, obviously your goal is slightly different. Yeah, you're training to be exceptional, not just to stay healthy.
Mm-hmm.
But then I think most people who end up training to be healthy probably had a different goal to start with, and then
regressed to it.
Then, yeah, exactly. They regressed back to well, okay, I'm not going to change the shape I am. I'm not going to be one of the big strong guys. Yeah, maybe I'll settle for this. My work colleague and good friend of mine, Becky, she said something interesting to me, actually, a couple of years ago. There was a guy who came in and he was chatting to us, and the first thing he said is, oh, I don't want to be big and strong looking at me. Like, you know, I'm sort of thinking, I'm not that big or strong, but compared to him, I was, obviously. I don't want to get bigger and stronger. And after he left, Becky said to me, do you believe that? Do you really believe that the average guy doesn't want to be big and strong? You know, that is going against evolution.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the big, strong guy gets the best breeding female, usually.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they're best able to provide for their family. You know, why would a guy not want to be big and strong? It just doesn't make sense. So, you know, I don't question people who say that, but what she said does kind of ring true to me.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the average person. The average person sets that nebulous goal. They underestimate the behaviors needed to achieve a specific goal, and they end up frustrated. And the elite performer, the mighty man or woman, will accept that they're going to work hard. They're going to put the hours into training. They're going to eat in line with their goals. And when they think about, well, I'm going to be training 4 hours a week, I might as well win. I might as well do what's needed to be done. So the behaviors are there almost already. They might need to be refined,
mm-hmm.
but with the behaviors in place, then a lofty goal can be set. The results can be achieved, and they go about living that extraordinary life. And that is the difference, in a nutshell.
Well put. I don't have anything to add to that, so I think that's probably a good place to stop. What do you say?
Absolutely, Nick, and hopefully it hasn't been too rambling.
We're always a bit rambly, but
that's our MO, isn't it?
That's part of the fun of it, though. So
exactly.
Record it once and share our knowledge and have a few good laughs and hopefully share some useful information. So.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for being the host again, Nick, and asking the pertinent questions, and also clarifying some of my more non-clear points. That's very good of you. That's very much appreciated.
Yeah, well, thanks for doing all of the heavy lifting as usual. I just got to carry the log here. And thanks to our listeners for stopping by and listening to the third episode of the MightyCast. So we'll talk to you next week.